Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One of the first sets of issues that Cicero considers in his fragmentary work on fate has to do with a type of determinism that he here associates with natures, the natures of places and the natures that people have that we often call, using an old-fashioned word, temperament. And the idea here is that growing up or being born or living in a certain place would have effects upon a person that would in some way determine their actions, would contribute to their destiny or their fate. And that's the location, that's where they live. Then we can also talk about their body itself. Certain bodies would have tendencies towards certain kinds of behaviors. And many people, even in our own time, do in fact think of matters in this way, that if you're born in this place, or if you're born with this certain set of temperaments, or we might even talk about brain states, that you inevitably are going to do or not do certain things. You'll make certain choices. And all of that will be determined or fated, something that you cannot do otherwise. There's a sort of necessity that comes along with that. Now, what is the basic argument here? Cicero says, well, we do in fact observe differences in the natures of localities, of loci in Latin, right? And what he means, if you look at the examples that he's bringing up, there's Athens as a city, and then there's Thebes, another city and region to the north of Athens, and they each have their own characteristics. So here in America, we might talk about the difference between growing up in the city or in the countryside or in the Midwest versus growing up in the muggy South, you know. We could talk about humidity and heat and all these sorts of influences and what they do to people. And, you know, if you think about, for example, seasonal affective disorder, right? An issue for those of us who live in places that used to have quite harsh winters, like Wisconsin. Or if you think about the people who live in places where the sun doesn't shine very often, who, you know, have similar issues like those living in Seattle, maybe there's actually something to this, many people would say. So he says, we see the wide difference between natural characters of different localities, the naturae, right? He says, some areas are healthy, others unhealthy. And this might be because of a whole different set of circumstances, some of which could have to do with weather, some of which might have to do with parasites, some of which might have to do with all sorts of other factors as well. And once we introduce human beings into the equation and pollution, we have all sorts of other things. You could think also about the instances of lead poisoning in some of our large American cities in poor neighborhoods where piping is still sometimes lead, and lead paint has played a role in damaging people's brains. He doesn't have those as examples. He talks about some people being phlegmatic and overcharged with moisture, others being parched and dried up. He says, Athens has a rarefied climate, which is thought to cause a sharpness of wit above the average in the population. So he's giving a what we call a geographical deterministic argument for Athenian culture. Whereas at Thebes, the climate is dense, and so the Thebans are stout and sturdy. Now, there is some geographical determinism, and there is some effect on some things. Again, you know, think about the example of lead, which the ancients unfortunately didn't know about and poisoned themselves with by using. Think about the influence of lead or other metals upon brain development. Maybe there is something to this. But as Cicero points out, that is at a sort of large, big picture, very high view level of determinism. It doesn't actually determine our individual actions. So as he's going to point out, the rarefied air of Athens will not enable a student to choose between the lectures of Zeno, Arkesilaus, and Theophrastus. Zeno, the Stoic, Arkesilaus, the academic skeptic, and Theophrastus, the friend and follower of Aristotle who led his school. The dense air of Thebes will not make a man try to win a race at Nemea rather than at Corinth. When we get to the level of individual choices, or even very important choices, deciding where you're going to go and compete, or deciding which school you're going to study is a choice that determines other choices. The climate doesn't actually fate you to do things that way. You might say, well, the locality could. What if the Stoics are the only people who are available in the library? That's a function of the library. That's not so much a function of the place and weather and climate or anything like that. He says, carry the distinction further. Can the nature of the locality cause us to take a walk in Pompey's porch rather than in the campus? So this is quite important. Cicero will use this example of walking or sitting or standing for what he's going to call voluntary motions. And the geographical or climate or whatever it's going to be, determinism, if there is any such thing, doesn't actually extend down to the level of these individual particular actions and choices that we make. So we can say that there could be some propensity or some conditioning because of the locality, but it's not actually going to be determining us in any full sense. He also talks about the condition of the heavenly bodies, and he says that those can also influence people as well. He says the condition of the heavenly bodies is not going to influence everything. So, you know, what sign you're born under, where the planets are, any of that sort of stuff, it might determine some large-scale matters, but it's not actually going to decide for you that you will do this thing at that time. When we get to temperaments, we get to something that's less about the environment, more about who we are as individuals. And it's very clear that different people do in fact have, if not temperaments, if not something quite so fixed, they certainly have differences from each other, dissimilarities, right? And he says there are temperaments of humans that differ. He's talking about the natures of human beings differ from each other. And he says these dissimilarities could in fact result from different natural and antecedent causes. Now, those are some technical terms that were used by metaphysicians, particularly the Stoics, to talk about the things that make things happen, causes and effects. We're not going to get into what natural and antecedent causes are here, because we'll talk about that in a separate lecture. But it is important that he uses this term several times. Antecedent causes are those which precede, right? They are there and then they help to produce some sort of effect. A natural cause would be something a bit closer, more primary cause. And what are the dissimilarities that he's talking about? He gives you some examples. He says, some like sweet things, others slightly bitter things. Some are licentious, others prone to anger or cruel or proud. Others shrink in horror from vices of that sort of pride, cruelty, anger. So he says, we're told, inasmuch as there is so wide a difference between one nature and another, what is there surprising in the view that these points of unlikeness result from different causes? We can observe that people do, in fact, differ from each other in ways that are characteristic. Some people are more intelligent, other people are less so, or perhaps they're not less intelligent, they're just less diligent in using their mind, or they're not as attentive. Some people have poor impulse control, other people have much better impulse control. And we can go on and on and on with examples. What's the upshot of this? Many people think that temperament, once again, determines us, that temperament is fate. And Cicero points out that although temperament may give us propensities towards things, doesn't actually mean that our volitions, and he uses the term that we can translate as will or volition there quite explicitly, meaning individual things that we will or choose. And our desires, there he uses the term appetitus, so he could also say appetites or yearnings for something. Those aren't necessarily determined by natural and antecedent causes. Simply the fact that our temperaments or our natures are doesn't mean that the individual things that we actually choose to do are thereby determined. And he uses as examples, I mentioned before, sitting or walking. If I choose to walk to work rather than taking my car to work or finding a bus route to get there, that's my choice, and my temperament, although it may have guided me towards one thing, if I'm self-reliant, perhaps I'm, you know, guided towards walking, but I could still choose to drive my car. If I'm kind of more, you know, lazy or lackadaisical, perhaps I'd rather take a car or take the bus. Those things are not determined in any way by these natural and antecedent causes that cause the temperament. They could have other causes mixed in there. But the argument that's being made by the people that rely on this is that our natures are in some way fixed by these natural and antecedent causes, and those natures cause our individual actions. Not only can we look at individual examples of actions, we can also look at examples of particularly important individuals who had a certain nature but actually chose to go against it. So he gives us this great story about the Megarian philosopher Stilpo. The Megarians were very interested in dialectic. They were a minor Socratic school founded by Euclides at Megara. And then Stilpo is one of their main representatives at this time. He tells us the Megarian philosopher was undoubtedly a clever person and highly esteemed in his day. He was described in the writings of his own associates as having been fond of liquor and women. But they do not record this as a reproach, but rather to add to his reputation. Now, why would they be saying that it's a great thing that Stilpo was so attracted to liquor and women? Things that we would normally say, well, those are some weaknesses, those are some vices. Precisely because although he had that temperament, Stilpo made a deliberate effort not to completely free himself of those desires, but to not follow those desires. As he goes on, he says, he so completely had mastered and suppressed his vicious nature by study, no one ever saw him the worse for liquor or observed in him a single trace of licentiousness. Now, what does this imply? We have some control through what we will, what we choose, how we use our faculty of volition. We have some control over what we do with our characters or our temperaments. The other example that he brings up is that of Socrates. And this is a very funny case. There is a physiognomist. That's a person who looks at your face and, you know, to a lesser extent, other parts of your body, and then comes to judgments about what kind of a person you are, what character traits you will have, how you will behave, what sort of actions you will choose. So this physiognomist, Zoprius, professed to discover men's entire characters and natures from their body, eyes, face, and brow. What did he have to say about Socrates, the great, you might say, originator of the philosophical tradition in Athens? Not the first philosopher, of course, but he's probably the most important one. He said that Socrates was stupid and thick-witted because he had not got hollows in the neck above the collarbone. He would say those portions of anatomy were blocked and stopped up. And he also added that he was addicted to women, at which Alcibiades, the young man who Socrates tried to, you know, counsel and steer towards the good, who was in love with Socrates, was said to have given a loud guffaw. Now, Cicero goes on to say that it's possible these defects may be due to natural causes, but their eradication and entire removal, recalling the man himself from the serious vices to which he inclined, does not rest with natural causes, but with what? With will, voluntas, with effort, studio, and with training, disciplina in the Latin. So this notion that fate takes the form of a geographical or temperamental determinism is an idea that Cicero is combating, and he's doing so primarily by making a distinction between how on a high level we may in fact have some degree of determination, but it's not, you know, it's not making everything on the lower level happen with some sort of absolute, could not be anything other than this way necessity. At best, we have propensities or inclinations or however you want to put the idea. The things that are on the higher level, temperament, geography, they could make it more difficult for us, make it more easy for us, but it ultimately comes down to what we choose, and we have a great amount of malleability in how we use our volition, our will, our faculty of choice to determine ourselves. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.